I wrote at the time that we're in the battle for the soul of this nation. Oh, that's even more true today. We are in the battle for the soul of this nation. I believe history will look back on 4 years of this president and all he embraces as an aberrant moment in time. But if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation, who we are. And I cannot stand by and watch that happen. The core values of this nation, our standing in the world, our very democracy, everything that has made America, America is at stake. That's why today I'm announcing my candidacy for President of the United States. Folks, America is an idea that's stronger than any army, bigger than any ocean, more powerful than any dictator or tyrant. It gives hope to the most desperate people on earth. It guarantees that everyone is treated with dignity and gives hate no safe harbor. It instills in every person in this country the belief that no matter where you start in life, there's nothing you can't achieve if you work at it. That's what we believe. And above all else, that's what's at stake in this election.
As they say in my business, I'm gonna give you the whole load today.
We got the first sort of mainstream African-American who is articulate and bright and clean and a nice-looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook.
You're telling me we got to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt? Yes, I'm
done. You don't know my state. My state was a slave state. My state is a border state. My state is the eighth largest black population in the country. My state is anything from a northeast liberal state.
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. It's a fully, I'm not joking.
His mom lived in Long Island for 10 years or so. God rest her soul. And your mom's still alive as your dad passed. God bless her soul. A man who will be the next president of the United States, Barack America.
Hillary Clinton is as qualified or more qualified than I am to be Vice President of the United States of America. Let's get that straight. And quite frankly, it might have been a better pick than me.
So let me say it again. Thank you, Terry. And thank you, Dr. Pepper. And thank you, Chancellor, or Dr. Paper.
Romney wants to let he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put you all back in chains.
Think about what happened out in where Gabby Gifford, my good friend, was shot and mortally wounded.
Well, I say they're going to start to see unemployment grow this spring.
You mean employment?
It's going to take employment grow, I'm sorry.
Number one job facing the middle class, and it happens to be, as Barack says, a three-letter word, jobs, J-O-B-S, jobs.
See, I went to the big guys for the money. I was ready to prostitute myself in the manner in which I talk about it.
Chuck Graham, state senator, is here. Chuck, stand up, Chuck, let him see you. Oh, God love you, what am I talking about? I tell you what, you're making everybody else stand up, though, pal.
Now is the time to heed the timeless advice from Teddy Roosevelt, speak softly and carry a big stick, end of quote. I promise you, the president has a big stick. I promise you.
Now, I'm like the token black or the token woman. I was the token young person.
You are the best choice for the Democrats in 2020. Why didn't President Obama endorse you?
I asked President Obama not to endorse, and he doesn't want to. Whoever wins this nomination should win it on their own merits.
Sir, why you?
Welcome to Delaware.
Why you? You and your message very clearly made this about a debate about President Trump, but you're going to have to get through the Democratic primary first. Why are you the best choice for Democrats?
That'll be for the Democrats to decide.
How could you differentiate?
What do you think about the Mueller report, Mr. Vice President?
Talk about all the stuff in time, okay?
I have to say, I'm so touched by, moved by that video that he did. I mean, I'm so old. I remember all of that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember Iwo Jima, but I remember since then.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, our uncles were in Normandy. Our fathers were on the beach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We were the good guys in this country, and we're not. Mm-hmm. And now we're not. People look at this country in horror and say, what happened to America? Mm-hmm. It breaks my heart. And I love that he's doing it. He's taking this tack that it's not just about policy right now. He'll get to that. But America, look at this and say, do we want this America back or don't we? I mean, basically, that's what it's come down to.
I thought he totally nailed it. When you think about an announcement, it's even though we know Joe Biden, first impressions matter. And in politics, how you feel about the candidate matters. So, as you said, we'll get to policy, but watching this, it gave me chills throughout my entire body because it reminded me, Joy, differently than you felt, that there is still so much good in this country. And Joe Biden, I think, represents that, and his family represents that in his service. And what he's saying is, I'm here to sew this country back together. He wasn't running for the primary, by the way. He was running for the general election
in that announcement.
He said, I'm here to win over the presidency. I can't wait for him to come tomorrow because we have so many policy questions for him. But just in the basis of feeling, he completely nailed it today. Even if you're a Republican, you can't watch that and not feel good.
And you often say that, Abby, that politics is about how someone makes you feel. And I felt
more
the
of the
same
view
way.
At all. I mean, it's only right. So much of the view. All right. Crazy, creepy Uncle Joe has officially entered the race. This is great news because I'm telling you what they don't know is what is about to happen is going to be remarkable. Now, everyone is making comments. It's kind of funny. Well, you've got the ultra left wing of the Democratic Socialist Extremist Party and all of their crazy ideas. And Joe's going to stand apart and he's going to relate to the average, quote, Joe. No, Joe Biden. It's Obama Biden. All the Russia incidents that happened was on their watch. They didn't lift a finger to stop Russia from involving themselves in the 2016 presidential election. And they were warned. Why didn't you listen to Devin Nunes and others in 2014? Now, the president was funny today. He goes, welcome to the race, Sleepy Joe. I only hope you have the intelligence, long in doubt, to wage a successful primary campaign. It's going to be nasty, and you will be dealing with people who truly have some very sick and demented ideas. But if you make it, well, I'll see you at the starting gate, if he makes it, which is pretty funny. Oh, but he did get a big endorsement, and it wasn't Obama. Obama's asked about it, as you just heard. Obama's, what about Obama not supporting you? Obama, well, he said nice things about Joe and best decision he's made, but he won't endorse him. I think that kind of speaks volumes. It's owned by his president, but he did get Michael Avenatti. That was a well-sought-after endorsement by him. Now, what's happening is even Slate is writing this, not a conservative publication, that even Democrats are just rank and file increasingly skeptical that crazy, creepy Uncle Joe's ever going to be able to defeat Trump next year. Anyway, they point out if Democrats had any real confidence in Biden's political acumen, he wouldn't be facing so much competition in the nomination. And that's true. I mean, I think all of these people think he's going to be beaten. Well, he showed up in a poll today for the first time and he's doing well. Okay, that often happens. He has more name recognition than any of the other candidates. That's not going to last very long. Let me just put in perspective where we are here. You know, we just had the midterm. It's like we just had the 2000. Well, let's use the example of Obama. Obama's elected in 2008, and it's the 2010 midterm. Okay, you know, Donald Trump is walking down the escalator in a few months. And then you got the whole year of primaries coming up after this. I mean, so it's going leading up to the general election. It's going to be a long process. And Joe doesn't seem like he's got the energy in the end, but when Slate points out that the story of this 2020 presidential primary has been the historic size of the field, which will end up in the mid-20s, well before it's said and done. And I mean, it is, I didn't even realize until today how big it's really been getting, but don't pay that much attention. You got Cory Booker, you got Mayor Pete Buttigieg, you got Julian Castro, John Delaney, Maryland representative, nobody knows him, Tulsi, what is it, Gabbard? Kirsten Gabbard, okay, sorry, Hawaii representative, Gillibrand of New York, Mike Gravel, former Alaskan senator, not affiliated, Kamala Harris, the former governor of Colorado, John Hickenlooper, J. Inslee of Washington, former governor or governor, Amy Klobuchar, Wayne Messam, who's a Miramar, Florida mayor I've never heard of, Seth Moulton, a Massachusetts liberal, Robert Francis, Beto Bozo, you got Tim Ryan of Ohio, Bernie Sanders, you got Eric Swalwell, Elizabeth Warren, Marianne Williamson, wasn't she a self-help guru? Well, she's running. And then Andrew Yang, wasn't he the one that wanted to legalize, I think, all drugs? So with this slate of candidates, it's going to be interesting to watch because some one of these names is going to emerge likely out of nowhere. Now, it was small in 2016, not because politicians with national aspirations didn't exist. Everybody that is a congressman or senator, they want deep in their heart, they think that they're president. They think they're presidential material. They never are, but they think so. But Clinton, with her name recognition and financial resources and party relationships, little do we know until Donna Brazile took over after the fiasco at the Democratic National Convention, that, in fact, Hillary controlled the purse strings at the DNC, and they had rigged the primary against Bernie Sanders, and it was rigged from the get-go, no matter how well Bernie did. And, by the way, Bernie people yesterday are saying, if you try this crap again this time, we're going to be on it. So she had it also early on in 2016. She cleared the field because other candidates or those that desired to be president, you know, they kind of believed she was going to win. By the way, and no mainstream Bernie figured, you know, nobody thought Bernie was do as well as he did. And Biden is now something more like, you know, they could end up, they're saying in slate, more like a 2016 Jeb Bush, weak establishment favorite whose time has passed. Should voters deprioritize his top perceived strength, electability, who could soon face the wolves? Well, he leads in national and some early state polling, but not by much. The only potential candidates that bowed out for Biden to give him the space were Bloomberg and Terry McAuliffe. And though he may have more charisma than Bush did, the financial resources are now harder. And by the way, a broke Joe Biden is now sounding the alarm. This was in Politico because as of last night, he had $0 in his campaign coffers. Sanders has $18 million. Kamala Harris, $12 million. Even Robert Francis Beto, he has the dirt eater. He has $9 million. So Biden's now sounding the alarm with fellow Democrats, warning that if they don't pony up in the next 24 hours, it's going to make him look like a weak candidate. Yeah, although he is saying world leaders, I'm getting calls from all over the world. World leaders are begging me to do this, to save the country and save the world. What, world leaders want another $150 billion dropped on the tarmacs of mullahs in Iran that chant death to America and death to Israel? Oh, that's great. All right, we got a lot to get to today. 800-941-SHAWN. We're going to get into the case of Eddie Gallagher. I mean, when you read the New York Times and the Navy Times, you read two different stories about this case. Jonathan Gillum and Harald, also Secretary of Energy, former Governor Rick Perry is with us today. All right, as we roll along on a Thursday, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number announcement. President Trump will be on Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel, and his first real interview since the Mueller report came out. Let me go back to Slate for just a second here. I mean, them saying that Joe Biden is like a 2016 Jeb Bush, their words, not mine, and a weak establishment favorite whose time might be past, and should voters deprioritize his perceived strength and electability, he would soon face the wolves. And then they go on to say that the biggest challenge of Biden in the primary will be a compromised past spanning nearly 50 years. Yeah, the vetting he's going to get and face within his own party is going to be brutal. You know, his position on Anita Hill. That's why he went on the Anita Hill apology tour. His position on busing, his anti-busing rhetoric, most liberals find astonishing. Their words, not mine. Some of that rhetoric is all going to come back and haunt him. And as a senator for 36 years representing Delaware, you know, that is a state, as they say, run by banks. His economic record is more than a few blemishes. And I don't even think they've touched on his real weakness in terms of electability in a general election. When we learn everything that we're going to learn about Russian interference in the 2016 election. We're also going to learn that it's in the top levels within the Obama administration. This story now is creeping ever so close to Obama himself. And if it's getting towards Obama, that means it's getting towards creepy, crazy Uncle Joe. And that will mean that, wow, all of that abuse of power, corruption, what did they know? When did they know it? And if justice is served and all of these upper echelon people are in as much trouble as me and Sarah and Greg and John Solomon, if we all think, then it's going to have an impact on all of them. And the size of the field, I think their right and slate represents, you know, the belief by the other candidates that all of this is going to sink Biden on top of the horrific economic record, foreign policy record, and much more. He's got more troubles than you can even begin to talk about. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. One other thing, there was a FoxNews.com piece about Biden's entry into this race. His advocacy of the 94 crime bill will be used against him, according to ex-Sanders staffers, and that he would face scrutiny over his record in the Congress, particularly his strong advocacy for the 94 crime bill. And according to an independent voter, former Bernie Sanders staffer, Teslan Figaro, who I've interviewed, very nice person. I grew up in the 90s. My entire adult generation, those around me, we really suffered a major consequence with that bill. And she made these comments earlier today on Fox. First time nonviolent offenders who went to prison for 15, 16, 17 years. People are still in prison now as a result of that crime bill. Noting that while former Vice President Biden somewhat apologized for his support of the bill, he hasn't spoken about how it will be fixed. By the way, every single person that wanted to fix the crime bill, guess what? They never got it done. The person that got it done, well, his name would be President Trump. And as much as, you know, look at Alice Marie Johnson. I can watch people like Alice Marie Johnson get released from prison every single day of every single year. I mean, when she came out after 20 years, first time offender, drug offense, it was serious, went into the arms of her family and said publicly, thank you to the president. Thank you to the United States of America. I just want to promise you all, you will not regret giving me a second chance. I mean, that is a great remark. She says the issue isn't, we haven't seen anything to talk about how we're going to fix it. I want to talk about the policies. What are you going to do as president to fix what happened in the 90s bill? All right, so that's just a small part of what they're saying. Then his comments about busing will come up big time. And then the issue of, well, he has a track record now. And it goes back, spans nearly 50 years. I think he'd be 78 when he became president. And it goes back all that ways. And he doesn't seem to be the type that has the energy of, say, a Donald Trump. And let me tell you something. With the president's comments right out of the box, low energy, I mean, it's pretty funny. And this president likes to fight and fight to win. Anyway, so he's starting it in a deep fundraising hole. I told you earlier, Sanders, $18 million, Kamala Harris, $12 million. That we'll see what the numbers look like in a week from now. That'll be, I think, very telling. And it's the largest presidential field now in history as, you know, we're at a record 20. Hundreds filed each cycle, but only a sliver receive sustained media attention. Some of these names, I don't even know half of these people. Do you know who Marianne Williams, the spiritual guru, is? Linda, you know her? I mean, we all know with Andrew Yang, nobody really knows who he is. You know, even former Alaska Senator Mike Gravel, I barely remember him. He was never, you know, I guess he was a serious player at one point, gained notoriety from reading portions of the Pentagon Papers about the origins of the Vietnam War. Nobody's ever heard of this Miramar, Florida mayor. Wayne Messam is his name. He's struggling for media attention. These guys, some of these guys are going to fall off fast. So, you know, that's just obvious. As to the creepy side of Uncle Joe, we now know the Alabama Democrat that defeated Roy Moore last year, Doug Jones. He's now speaking out during an interview. He defended Biden and said, it's not for others to judge. Okay. If it was a Republican, I think he'd feel differently. Biden says foreign leaders, this is the most arrogant statement, and I don't even believe it. He's now saying, his campaign isn't 24 hours old, and he's putting his foot in his mouth already. I mean, if he thinks this much of himself, then he's a bit delusional. Because I don't think there are a lot of world leaders that looked on favorably. And I know there's a lot of appeasement, socialist, leftist governments in the world. So I concede that point. But in retrospect, the American people and the idea of dropping $150 billion in cash and other currency from cargo planes sent by Obama and Biden to radical mullahs in Iran, hoping it will draw goodwill, that maybe they won't talk about, you know, annihilating Israel anymore. Maybe they won't talk about annihilating America anymore. I don't know what the mentality is here. It is a radical, rigid regime. You know, think of how they treat their own people under the most rigid laws of Sharia. Women are treated atrociously in Iran. Gays and lesbians, we've seen the videos being thrown off roofs and murdered for no reason except being who they are. And of course, you can't practice another religion. Christians and Jews are persecuted. You know, good luck building a temple or a church in Tehran. It's not going to work out very well. But he says this, I get calls from people all over the world, world leaders. They're calling me, almost begging me to do this, to save the country, to save the world. I'm like, okay. All right, he's getting a little more crazy by the day. One of the participants on the call stressed Biden wasn't making it sound as though he had a messiah complex. Of course not. Why would anybody think that Joe Biden is really thinking very highly of himself? Now add two other factors that nobody in the media is talking about. That all of the Russia stuff, all of the abuse in our intelligence community and the DOJ and rigging Hillary's investigation, and we learned from Strzok and Page that that was all being directed by Obama Biden's attorney general. And that would be Loretta Lynch. Haven't heard Biden talk about that much either. And then when more information comes out, and we begin to discover that, oh, well, everybody was warning about Russia doing this in the past. You know, think back in 2012, Mitt Romney was excoriated for saying, and by Obama saying, that Russia's a threat. We've known that Russia has done this type of interference in many other elections around the world. This is not new information. You know, Devin Nunes's direct warning, they do it in 2016. He warned everybody in 2014. All of this deep state stuff happened on their watch. The fact that Stefan Halper recruited to spy on the Trump campaign vis-a-vis Carter Page and Papadopoulos and Sam Clovis and vis-a-vis, you know, Hillary's bought and paid for Russian dirty dossier, funneled money through a law firm, through a op research firm over to a foreign national, Christopher Steele. And, you know, now hearing this week, gee, Bob Woodward, welcome aboard. Washington Post even saying, oh, you're going to have to admit Fox was right, especially Hannity. Or the New York Times this week saying, that dossier, yeah, I think it might be part of a disinformation Russia campaign to influence the election, and Hillary paid for it all. And it's kind of despicable when you think about it. How can that happen in America? He's going to have to deal with that. He's going to have to be questioned. And it will be reminded every day what the Obama-Biden record for the economy was. And I know in 2016, I was a broken record. But you know what? It matters, especially in light of record low unemployment in this country. A growing, burgeoning economy. We're energy independent for the first time ever. The tax cuts, the vast majority of increase in monies in people pocket, real dollars, went to the, quote, poor and middle class in America, not to the rich, not to corporations. You look at all of the companies now, as a result of the biggest tax cut in history, the single biggest amount of deregulation in history, and the president, now we're energy independent for the first time in 75 years, the lifeblood of our economy. Well, that's going to, in and of itself, create career jobs for so many Americans. It's going to be life-changing. It will be the biggest wealth producer ever in our history. It's almost like we have a potential as a country to have a massive gold rush if we're just smart enough to do it. Because all the other countries are doing it. And we're now a net exporter of oil. And you think, oh, okay, all these corporations now, because of deregulation, they want to invest in Wisconsin and Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania. And they're doing it. And that's the only way we got towards record low unemployment for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, women in the workplace, youth unemployment. That it happened for a reason, coupled with the biggest tax cuts ever in history. You know, coupled with the promise of conservative justices, coupled with a president that ended that idiotic Iran deal, stopped little Rocket Man from firing rockets over Japan every other weekend. Understand the president's meeting the Japanese prime minister on trade issues. We're in the middle of negotiating new trade deals with China that will benefit American manufacturers, American cars, companies. You know, just like everybody laughed at the idea, well, why are you pressuring our allies like Canada and Mexico? Because these deals were unfair. These deals were not just. These deals took advantage of us. And by the way, if the president gets that wall built and we get control of our southern border, and it's happening, you know, it's so funny. The president issues his emergency declaration. Everybody complains about it. They try to veto the legislation. They can't override his veto. He vetoes the legislation, overrides the veto. And now he's reallocated $9 trillion. And guess what's happening? We're now building the wall, and he's got the resources. And when Mexico said this week, you know, tried to take away guns from our law enforcement, this better never happen again. And the president immediately sent down armed troops down there to help out our law enforcement because they need that kind of help. And the president, both legislatively, Congress had given him the authority on the border, and Congress also, the mandate was clear. The president has the authority to build barriers, put up lighting, et cetera, if in fact corridors, drug dealing from across the border is happening. Okay, legislatively, he wins. Congress passed that law, giving him that authority, and it drives people crazy. Then you start comparing, well, what are the Democrats going to stand for? What? They're going back to, now it's Medicare for all instead of Obamacare? Obamacare didn't work out. You have a significant percentage of this party wants a 70% marginal tax rate for individuals, 90% for corporations. Let me tell you what that means. It means zero economic growth, negative growth, and money pouring out of the country. People will leave the country. You know, it's fairly inexplicable, isn't it, that they could, you know, be thinking at this level at this time. You know, let me give you a statistic that we have today. There are 41 states that are seeing tax revenues surge to all-time highs. 41 of them. And by the way, as Trump now enters, you know, the Trump economic boom and enters its third year. This is from Pew. Now, tax revenue rose in all but five states in the third quarter of 2018, lifting the number of states in which collections had fully recovered from the Great Recession to a record high 41 after accounting for inflation. State tax revenue turned the corner in late 2017 after the weakest 2 years of economic growth outside of a recession in at least 30 years. Who became president? Donald Trump. You know, who was the president that we had our weakest years? That would be the Biden-Obama administration. As most states entered 2019, their budget in July, a fourth consecutive quarter of solid gains, pushing total state tax collections to 13.4% above their peak record in 2008. Oh, what's the similarity? You know, Obama was elected, and then it got better as soon as Obama and Biden left. And the states that aren't doing well, you got it. Oh, let's see, New York. Oh, they're down $3.5 billion the last I checked. So, you know, he's going to have to run on that record. And Trump's going to run on his. Because 8 years of Obama gave us 8 million more Americans in poverty. whatever the statistic is, I've given you many times. We're now looking at the greatest potential opportunity for growth. And let me tell you, it's going to say, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And why didn't you do anything about Russia? How did you let this happen on your watch? Unbelievable. I know the media is going to try and ignore a lot of this, but we'll do their job. But I think the American people, you know what George Will used to always say? Peace and prosperity drive elections. The Trump economy versus the Obama economy. I mean, 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, lowest labor participation since the 70s. We now have in America a million more jobs available than people on unemployment. We now have a record low again of unemployment applications. By the way, controlling the border, I didn't finish my thought. Yeah, that helps Americans get jobs at higher wages. Thank you. That's good for every American. We're not against immigration. Just do it legally so we can vet you, make sure you can take care of yourself when you're invited to be a part of our family. All of this helps. Worst recovery, the 8 years of Biden-Obama. Worst recovery in 40 years. Lowest home ownership rate in 51 years. Only administration never to reach 3% GDP growth. Took on more debt than every other president before them combined and vice president. And Obama won't even endorse him. Pretty funny. All right, we got a lot to get to. Secretary of Energy, former governor of Texas, Rick Perry, is going to talk borders, the election, and energy, obviously. I'm going to ask if he believes as I do. You know, those that want to get rid of oil and gas, the combustion engine, planes and cows, and everything's free. What if we just tapped into all the energy resources we have and become the biggest net exporter? How would that impact the forgotten men and women in this country, job-wise, finance-wise, wealth-wise? All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Glad you are with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, I told you Biden got in. I did forget one thing before we get to our friend, former governor, Secretary of Energy, Rick Perry. We have newly surfaced video. Remember Bernie's comments before the fake news CNN town hall? And he said to the woman whose family fled the former Soviet Union in 1979, is it your assumption that I believed in authoritarian communism that was the Soviet Union? I haven't. I opposed it. Well, okay. We now have unearthed video footage on Fox News that shows Bernie Sanders recalling his excitement surrounding the Cuban Revolution in the 50s. I remember for some reason or another being excited when Castro made the revolution in Cuba. By the way, you know what he did, right? He stole all the land, took over all industry, and they went on a murdering rampage. And I knew one of the survivors. Sadly, he passed away, this man named Armando de Quesada. He's out of Decatur, Alabama. Mando's Pizza. I used to talk to this guy all the time. He's such a good guy. And his family were wealthy landowners. Everything they had was stolen. Part of the resistance, they were killed. Whole family, everybody knew. I was a kid and it just seemed right, Bernie's appropriate. The poor people rising up against rather ugly rich people. Just like when he said that Senate millionaires are immoral. Well, he's a Senate millionaire now. And Bernie, by the way, Bernie backers are vowing revenge if the Democratic establishment steals the nomination again. Bernie or bust is their rallying cry. And, oh, Bernie was heckled and jeered at the Woman of Color event. Yikes, didn't get much coverage, but it happened. All right, I just got done laying out two things, well, many things, challenges that Biden's going to have as part of the Biden-Obama team. And obviously, 50 years, his positions on busing, his stupid statements, his creepy behavior, that's all part of it. But I think the biggest thing that will stand out is, number one, all the warnings and admonitions we had about Russia, election, interference, hacking, all of it. They didn't lift a finger. Specific warnings in 2014, they didn't lift a finger. All of this deep state abuse of power and corruption, it all happened under them. And they did nothing. And then on top of that, I went through the last hour of the economic record, which is atrocious. I also said that we could make every American richer than ever. If we would finally, we're now energy independent for the first time because of Donald Trump deregulation and now opening up the pipelines, approving them, Dakota Pipeline, Keystone Pipeline, opening up Anwar. In other words, we have more oil and natural gas resources than the entire Middle East and Russia combined. For the first time in 75 years, we're a net exporter of energy. We're talking about high-paying career jobs for the forgotten men and women in this country. Like when we partnered with energy companies in Texas and Oklahoma and North Dakota during the recent boom. Remember, they were training truck drivers and paying them 80 grand a year. And people saying, I listened to you, Hannity, and I moved, and you're right. I was only making 35 grand, 40 grand. Now I'm making 100, and I just bought a brand new truck. If we did this on the scale we're capable of, and we could also provide security for our allies on the one hand in Western Europe once we figure out how to get it there cheaper, and then also we're not relying on countries that hate our guts for the lifeblood of our economy, that means Americans, every American can get rich. It's like a gold mine for every American. Secretary of Energy, former governor, friend of the show, Rick Perry. Am I wrong in that?
Ooh, Sean, you are on fire today, brother.
How you doing, my friend? Good to hear your voice. I miss you. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Well, we've been kind of had our head down and doing our job there in D.C. and around the country. And it's a big swamp out there, man. It's going to take a lot to drain it all and drain it in a timely way. But I can promise you the president every day is getting up and making a difference, you know, whether it's watching this extraordinary energy revolution that you're talking about here occur across this country. I mean, think about this, Sean. 12 years ago, we were told that we had found all the energy that there was in America. As a matter of fact, I think it was President Obama who said, you can't drill your way out of this problem that you got today. Well, Mr. President, you can drill your way out of this problem, and you're seeing Americans do it. The problem was you were in the way, Mr. President. You and your administration were putting regulations into place. You were picking and choosing winners out there from the standpoint of if you were in fossil fuel, if you were in the coal business, you were in the nuclear business, you had to fight every day just to try to stay alive. And President
Trump, by the way, if there's anybody that would know this, it's you, because we know the energy production in Texas over the years, and it's been a boom and bust over the years. It's been hard, good times and bad times, but the good times are really good times.
Well, what we've seen in Texas, and you know, I tell people, I said, listen, we're not perfect, but I think from the standpoint of developing an all of the above energy strategy, Texas is a pretty good example. You'll recall, while I was the governor, we developed more wind energy than any other state in the nation. As a matter of fact, we produced more wind in Texas than all but five countries. And we were complementing our diversity of energy resources. We were developing the oil and gas business. We were building pipelines. And that is a good segue into the president's executive order that he signed about 10 days ago to go really make infrastructure at the heart. And these are real projects. I mean, you think about if the previous administration had actually gone out and spent dollars where you were creating real infrastructure. As a matter of fact, what this president knows is you don't have to spend taxpayer dollars to do this. You just need to get the federal government out of the way, get the permitting process expedited so that when somebody knows that there's going to be a permit, here are the rules. And if you meet these rules, here's the permit. That's called permitting by rule. That's where President Trump is taking this country. It's the reason you've seen this explosion.
Well, let me ask you a question. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I'm usually pretty good with remembering, but now that you include Anwar and our natural gas potential reserves, I mean, they're massive. I've read hundreds of years worth of natural gas, which is the lifeblood of our economy. Now, the new Green Deal wants to get rid of natural gas and oil in 10 years, the lifeblood of the world's economy, the dumbest idea I've ever heard. But if we really began to tap these resources, how vast are they compared to, say, Russia and the Middle East?
Well, and our reserves are growing every day. I mean, that's the interesting thing. We're the number one oil and gas producing country in the world. You know where the third largest oil and gas field in the world is? It's the Permian Basin in West Texas. Right behind Saudi Arabia, Russia, and then there is the Permian Basin. When you add all these other basins, the Marcellus and the Utica up in Pennsylvania and that Appalachian region, by the way, that does reach
New York. You mean like upstate New York? They won't touch.
But you can't use it because you've got such small-minded people in all of New
York. Dumb.
They're afraid to.
By the way, Pennsylvania, they're sticking they do the horizontal drilling, et cetera. I mean, they're just literally stealing it right out of New York as we speak. I'm kidding. By the way, this just broke. If I could do a little break, New York Times came out with a piece just now. Joe Biden reached out to Anita Hill, but she wants real accountability. And she said in an interview that she left the conversation feeling deeply unsatisfied, declined to characterize his words to her as an apology. She said she is not convinced that Biden truly accepts the harm that he caused her and other women who suffered sexual harassment and gender violence. Here we go. It's fascinating because Democrats, you know, they care about believing, you know, a high school fairy tale about Justice Kavanaugh, I believe, but we have a lieutenant governor in Virginia. If you're a Democrat, they don't care about accusations of rape and violent sexual assault. They don't, no believers there. But anyway, so that's an interesting article that just came out. I'm sorry to break in, but what would this mean? I say that the energy industry is going to produce high paying career jobs for every American because where we've had energy and we have a lot of it, we haven't even tapped. We now, you know, truck drivers are getting trained and being a base salary of $80,000 and all the overtime they can handle.
Sean, this is a generational opportunity. I look at this and I share with people, and I've seen it happen in my home state. Young people who had maybe 2, 3, 4 generations of not even being able to get out of high school, they thought they just had to get out and get a job and get to work, and not only is this allowing people the opportunity to get out, start a family, to be able to buy a home, which is, by the way, that's the biggest source of net worth that most people are ever going to have, is to buy that first home, and these energy related jobs, and I might add the concentric circle of influence that comes out from this isn't just about jobs in the energy industry. It's the manufacturing jobs that come because of the energy prices that we're being able to have and build.
Oh, they're still low.
Manufacturing. So this is truly about generational changes. I mean, I think most Americans understand this. It's like, you know, thank you, President Trump, for giving us the opportunity to take care of our families, to have a better future, to create this wealth. I mean, I'll give you a great example. This one just blew me away when I saw it. And this is a barber out in far west Texas, out in that Permian Basin region. He put an Airstream trailer on the back of his pickup truck, went out to some of these man camps that were the labor, and is making over $100,000 cutting hair. I mean, I know that's anecdotal, but it's reflective of what's happening all over
right.
that part of the industry, whether you're up in the Bakken in North Dakota or whether you're in the Marcellus, or you're down in the Haynesville in Louisiana, all across this country. Sean, when we start building more pipelines to be able to move this product from where it's developed to the markets, wherever those markets,
Western Europe, et cetera. Speaking of Biden earlier, apparently Anita Hill not happy with his call. But more importantly, if you removed your economy in Texas as governor, now we now have, you know, 41 states, Mr. Secretary, 41 that have huge revenue increases. We see population decreases all over the place in New York, New Jersey, California, Illinois. People are leaving these high tax states. You know, Texas nearly got 400,000 new people last year. If they, if you remove Texas's economic prosperity under your leadership from the Obama economy, they would have had a depression on paper.
Yeah, they would have been underwater.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I mean, we talked about it at the time.
Yeah. It's really fascinating that the few states, you know, Florida was out there under the leadership of a really good, capable governor Rick Scott, who's a United States senator now. And without those few states, America would have been in a real bind. The key here, and I tell people this, is that people always move around in the country. I mean, they're free to move around fairly well. But here was my bumper sticker, Sean. Capital goes where it's welcome. And today, when you have the energy industry doing what it's doing, the manufacturing that's coming back under the Trump administration, there are states out there that are doing really, really well. There are some states that aren't doing that well, frankly. Where you live is one of them. And one of the reasons is because
I'm stuck here, by the way.
Those state leaders would rather have their make their little political statements than look at reality. For instance, the idea that you can't send a pipeline of American natural gas to the Northeast, and guess who's paying the price for that? It's those citizens up there that are
living
under. I'm
almost out of time. You're right.
Electricity. It's 60% higher for residential and 40% higher. I mean, that's crazy. And it's
$3.5 billion shortfall in New York. 41 states have massive surpluses. You see people leaving in droves. They're going to, you know, your home state and Florida and Tennessee and the Carolinas.
Well, this administration is making places in America really welcome for people's capital, and because they know that if you risk your capital, you'll have a chance to have a return on the investment. That's what the Trump administration is all about. You're seeing it
across
the board, whether it's at the EBA, wherever it is.
Don't be a stranger. Governor, Secretary of Energy Rick Perry, the story of Eddie Gallagher next. Sean Gallagher, he is the brother of Eddie Gallagher. Remember, the story of Eddie Gallagher, has a father, he's a family of three, his wife Andrea, decorated U.S. SEAL. He's now confined behind razor wire in a military jail. He served the country for nearly two decades. In many ways, he has been a hero on the battlefield. There is a new development in this case. I read the New York Times piece, and if you read that, it reads one way. Stabbing a defenseless teenage captive to death, picking off school-age girl and an old man from a sniper's roost, indiscriminately spraying neighborhoods with rockets and machine gun fire. Navy SEAL commandos from Team 7's Alpha Platoon said they had seen their highly decorated platoon chief commit shocking acts in Iraq. They have spoken up repeatedly, and by the way, they eventually had a meeting with their platoon leader in San Diego. A criminal investigation ensues eventually. And anyway, long story short, when you start getting down into the actual specific allegations of this, now the platoon members eventually forced the referral of their concerns outside the SEALs. There's going to be a trial that begins May 28th. The account of March 8, 2018, meeting and other details is a 439-page report, and it paints a subculture of people. But when you get to the actual investigations, a lot of it sounds like SEAL talk. Maybe the best equivalent would be locker room talk. And if you ask if they've seen these things, the answer is no. Now, a huge development yesterday by the NavyTimes.com. The headline is prosecutors, NCIS investigator accused of misconduct in war crimes case. And a motion was filed this week in California threatening to derail the entire war crimes case against Eddie Gallagher. Remember, the president stepped in and put him in better living conditions. And it was drafted by Gallagher's civilian defense attorney, a guy by the name of Timothy Politori. And it paints a portrait of stonewalling. Prosecutors refusing to turn over evidence that could clear In other words, exculpatory evidence that could clear the embattled chief and a federal cop who allegedly went rogue in cherry-picking witness statements to salvage a rickety case. Quote, rather than conduct a proper investigation in search of the truth, the agent began with a predetermined conclusion and went about finding the evidence to support that conclusion while ignoring or suppressing anything that conflicted with the narrative. Now, I understand there's new evidence that has emerged in this case. Congressman Duncan Hunter of California is taking a special interest in this. So has former NYPD Commissioner Bernie Kerig. Duncan Hunter and Sean Gallagher, brother of Eddie Gallagher, join us now. Thank you all for being with us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Hey, Sean,
thank you.
And, hey, this is Duncan. Here's what's happening, too.
Well, Duncan, you're reading what I'm reading. You're reading two very different narratives here.
Here's what they're doing. They're sucking us into their lawyer narrative, meaning this is about do the American people want guys to go kill people for the country? When the president and Congress says, we're going to send you overseas to go do something, do you want guys that will do that, or do you want lawyers back here at home to put these guys in jail? The American people ask for guys to serve on the front lines. I've served overseas. Let us do what you want us to do. And even you talking about it, people, it's kind of you get lost in the weeds on all the lawyer stuff. Do you want men to go kill bad people for the country? If you do, then guys like Eddie are heroes. Meaning, and by the way, if all of your listeners give money to Eddie's defense fund, please. We ought to send all the lawyers to Iraq and Afghanistan and let those guys go and fight it out that we wouldn't have to pay them. Number one, help Eddie out. Number two, either you believe that this country's worth fighting for and you want men to go kill bad men overseas, or you don't. If you do, then Eddie's a hero. If you don't, then we shouldn't have a military. And I'll tell you what, Trump is kind of right. Then let's get out of Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan. Let's not have these guys go and do what we ask them to do and go fight and kill people, because that's what we're paying guys to do, is go fight and kill and then bring them back here and put them in jail for what we as a nation asked them to go do. This is ridiculous.
Sean Gallagher, obviously, this is your brother. How many tours of duty was he involved in as a Navy SEAL?
So, yeah, Eddie went to Iraq in 2003. So this is actually his last deployment. The one that's in question was the second time he had been to Mosul. So if you think about a guy like him has been going to war for us for 15 years. Eight times he's gone back to fight for us in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Bring us into whoever these people, other SEALs, apparently six or seven of them, that didn't get along with your brother. What is the story behind that?
So the story behind this, and this is where the frustrating part comes in as a family. My sister-in-law, my brother, and me, and a bunch of others have been what I say is cursed with the truth. I've known about this whole thing before the investigation even started. It has never been seven to nine guys of his platoon. It's always been one to two who made up stories because they didn't want Eddie to be their boss again. And I know that sounds simplistic, but in the SEAL teams, reputation is everything. Your honor and your code and all that stuff is everything. And Eddie had seriously reprimanded guys who were brand new, who had never been on combat before, for dereliction of duty, for a mutiny abroad. And so he told them, hey, look, either get out of the teams or ship up or shape out. And they didn't like that. And so when they got home, they spun up these stories. The thing that you had just started in the lead-in, the difference between the New York Times article and the Navy Times article, is the frustration that we've been dealing with since day one. The Navy Times article was finally another step where the truth is starting to come out, where investigators literally sat a bunch of guys from Eddie's platoon down, tried to coax stories to fit their own narrative out of them.
And are any of them willing to say that they were coaxed into saying something that's not true?
Absolutely. So the Navy Times article that you started with last night, or that came out last night, that you started the top of the show with, in it, one of the key witnesses, according to the prosecution, just flipped. And he actually didn't even flip. What he said in his follow-up interview was, I never said what you think I did. I never saw Eddie shoot anybody like a little girl or an old man. That's insane. And also, by the way, I never witnessed the stabbing of an ISIS detainee. I just saw Eddie treating him. And so this is one of those things where 8 months, 9 months after this whole mess has started, 7 months of Eddie in prison, all of this stuff, we find out that prosecutors are withholding exculpatory evidence from our team, from Timothy Parlatori and the family. We finally, via an illegal leak of information sent to the media, we discovered that there was actually exonerating evidence that so, you know, I know that the family and I have always been saying this, you know, this never happened, this is all a concoction, but now there's some gratification in that we actually have proof.
rather than the proper investigation, they start, as the Navy Times piece said, with a predetermined conclusion you're pointing out. Your brother's accused of stabbing to death an unarmed and seriously wounded Islamic State prisoner of war during a 2017 deployment and shooting an old man and a young girl in a violent spree that claimed hundreds of lives. And then the Navy Times goes on to say, although the motion accuses prosecutors of withholding evidence benefiting Gallagher, records independently uncovered by the Navy Times, the motion expends much of its ink on the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, which, by the way, the, I guess, prosecutor in this case is accusing of botching the entire probe. And the lead investigator on the case, the NCIS special agent, apparently is in the crosshairs of the council here. Does any such evidence exist in any way? Duncan, I hear there is video.
Okay, so I've actually seen the video that the prosecutors wouldn't show anybody. And by the way, if they showed people the video, it shows Eddie trying to save the terrorist's life. And by the way, he's not a POW. He's not wearing a uniform. We're not fighting uniformed people. We're fighting people that hate our country, that hate Christianity, that hate Western civilization, that dress like civilians, hide their guns. And you're going to treat Eddie like a police officer on the streets of San Diego as opposed to somebody that we're paying to go kill bad guys. I mean, that was his job. And so the answer is, I've seen the video. It shows Eddie trying to save the terrorist's life. That's what it shows. And I can't wait till the video becomes public. They've used the video to try and scare people to go against Eddie Gallagher. When the video, once you see it, you're like, hey, I've seen people that have no military experience saw the video. And they left going, that exonerates him. That proves that he didn't do anything bad.
The hard thing I have a hard time understanding, why would his own guys turn against him? And by the way, not all of them, just a few. Why?
Yeah, it's kind of like a family, Sean. I mean, you ask, well, why doesn't Uncle Jim talk to you on Thanksgiving about politics? It's the same kind of deal. It's a small, tight environment. He wasn't liked by a few guys. And by the way, not... just like Sean said, not six or seven or eight or nine guys, one or two guys, and that are in the video and the pictures that I've seen. So these guys that dimed him out are posing with him in some of these pictures, smiling, happy.
Then some have recanted. Is that true?
No. So here's the problem, Sean. They lied. So now they need immunity from the prosecutor to be able to tell the prosecutors that they lied. And the prosecution doesn't want to give the SEALs immunity to recant their stories. You see what I'm saying? Because if you tell a false story in the first place and you want to go back and say, hey, that was not true, that's what I said, I was coerced into saying what I said, then they'll get you on perjury. The SEALs now want immunity to say that what they said in the first place was coerced and not true. And the prosecution, of course, is not going to give them immunity. This is about leaks. It's about lies from the prosecutors and half-truths, and they're leaking all this information to the New York Times. I mean, this is the U.S. Navy prosecutors. It sounds eerily just like what our president is going through right now. It's the exact same kind of thing by an overzealous and corrupt judicial system, but this one's in the military, so it's even tighter and harder to expose than the Department of Justice corruption.
All right, stay right there. Duncan Hunter, Congressman California, Sean Gallagher is the brother of Eddie Gallagher. When is this supposed to go to trial at this point, or is it in a delay because of the evidence issue? We'll take a break. We'll find out. We'll answer that question when we get back. All right, as we continue, Congressman Duncan Hunter and Sean Gallagher, who is the brother of Eddie Gallagher, and this whole convoluted story about, you know, being charged with war crimes and then... apparently, there's new evidence proving that he was helping the person that other people said that he was responsible for killing when he didn't have to. Sean, why are we there at that point if we have video evidence that Congressman Hunter just described to us? Wouldn't that be exculpatory completely and end it? That makes no sense at that point.
Absolutely. And the best way that I can describe this is just to say the process is broken, that the system is broken. And the reason that I can say that is that this whole thing has been going on for 9 months, right? Eddie was originally charged with something like 10 counts. We have dropped, in including the article that you mentioned in the Navy Times, which has exculpatory evidence, that's probably going to drop four more charges. So you're seeing now, Eddie, they treated him like a mafia boss.
All right, so two charges already dropped. Four charges you're saying will likely drop. Then what's left?
Then the only charge that will be left is the one where they claim that he stabbed the ISIS fighter that just moments ago was firing at him when he's actually trying to save his life. So they charged
somebody
him with shooting.
Described it that saw it. I have not seen it, so I don't know that maybe he was seen trying to put a trach in or something.
So yeah, the confirmed reports, the quick scenario of the situation is that he pulled him off a Humvee. Iraqi special forces gather him, right? So there's a compound that was Hellfire missile. It kills 50 ISIS fighters. One survives. The 17-year-old boy, he gets taken off a Hummer. Eddie says, I'm going to take him. I'm going to try and save him. There's video of my brother cutting away his pants, bandaging a wound, and starting to provide medical care. That's where the video cuts out.
And that's the last charge you're saying involved in this? Now, are there eyewitnesses that will testify they saw him try to save that life, not take it?
Yes. So this is another insane thing that I've been saying, is that we actually have 3 to 4 times as many people who will say that Eddie never did this than those that did. So let me put it to you this way, Sean. Every single lawyer I've ever talked to about this case has looked at this and said this would have never made it past a grand jury in a civilian case, that you would have never heard about Eddie's name, that none of this stuff would ever come to light because right. The evidence is so bad and the story is so bad. However, because it's a military court of law and the Article 32 equivalent, which is a grand jury, the evidence threshold is so low and it's political, Sean. So they want to send a message. This is all about politics. It's about career brass saying, oh, Navy SEALs are going rogue, and we need to send a message to get their stuff together. Well, now they're throwing Eddie under the bus to send that message, but they didn't expect for me and his wife and their family to fight back tooth and nail, and for him as well. I mean, he fought for the country for 20 years. He's not going to just sit there and take it. And so they messed up, and this is a major black eye in the military, and that's what I've been pleading with the president to take a look at this, because I promise you, if I sit down with anybody for 20 minutes and explain to them, start to finish, this entire case, they walk away shaking their head in shame that this is happening to Eddie and yep. That it's ever started in the first place.
All right, I got to let you both go. We're going to continue to follow this story in this case. Thank you both for being with us. Congressman Hunter, I don't know when you can give us that tape, but when you can, we will air it. Thank you, Sean Gallagher. Thank you. And I understand Bernie Kerik is with you. Send my best to Bernie. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. Your call's coming up next.
I wrote at the time that we're in the battle for the soul of this nation. Well, that's even more true today. We are in the battle for the soul of this nation. I believe history will look back on 4 years of this president and all he embraces as an aberrant moment in time. But if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation, who we are. And I cannot stand by and watch that happen. The core values of this nation, our standing in the world, our very democracy, everything that has made America, America is at stake. That's why today I'm announcing my candidacy for President of the United States. Folks, America's an idea that's stronger than any army, bigger than any ocean, more powerful than any dictator or tyrant. It gives hope to the most desperate people on earth. It guarantees that everyone is treated with dignity and gives hate no safe harbor.
As they say in my business, I'm gonna give you the whole load today.
We got the first sort of mainstream African American
yeah. Who
is articulate and bright and clean and a nice looking guy. Mm. I mean, that's a storybook.
You're telling me we got to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt? Yes, I'm done.
You don't know my state. My state was a slave state. My state is a border state. My state is the 8th largest black population in the country. My state is anything from a Northeast liberal state.
You cannot go to a 7-Eleven or a Dunkin' Donuts unless you have a slight Indian accent. I'm not joking.
His mom lived in Long Island for 10 years or so. God rest her soul. And your mom's still alive as your dad passed. God bless her soul.
A man who will be the next president of the United States, Barack America.
Hillary Clinton is as qualified or more qualified than I am to be Vice President of the United States of America. Let's get that straight. And quite frankly, it might have been a better pick than me.
So let me say it again. Thank you, Terry. And thank you, Dr. Pepper. And thank you, Chancellor, or Dr. Paper.
Romney wants to let he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put you all back in chains.
Think about what happened out in where Gabby Gifford, my good friend, was shot and mortally wounded.
Well, I say they're going to start to see unemployment grow this spring.
You mean employment?
It's going to take employment grow, I'm sorry.
Number one job facing the middle class, and it happens to be, as Barack says, a three-letter word, jobs, J-O-B-S, jobs.
See, I went to the big guys for the money. I was ready to prostitute myself in the manner in which I talk about it.
Chuck Graham, state senator, is here. Chuck, stand up, Chuck, let him see you. Oh, God love you. What am I talking about? I tell you what, you're making everybody else stand up, though, pal. Now is the time to heed the timeless advice from Teddy Roosevelt, speak softly and carry a big stick. End of quote. I promise you, the president has a big stick. I promise you.
Now, I'm like the token black or the token woman. I was the token young person.
All right, there he is. Crazy, creepy Uncle Joe enters the Democratic campaign to run as president. Ocasio-Cortez, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Pelosi in name only, attacking Biden. He's out of touch with the Democratic Party. The president weighs in about Sleepy Joe. Welcome to the race, Sleepy Joe. I only hope you have the intelligence, long in doubt, to wage a successful primary campaign. He said, warning Biden that the race would be nasty and he would be forced to confront people who truly have some very sick and demented ideas, an apparent reference to other candidates. But if you make it, I'll see you at the starting gate. And Obama breaks his silence. Oh, the best decision he ever made, but he won't endorse crazy, creepy Uncle Joe. Apparently, Biden's having some fundraising problems. And I'll tell you, the biggest problem Joe Biden has is the Obama record. The, you know, 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, lowest labor participation rate since the 70s, worst recovery since the 40s, lowest home ownership rate in 51 years, only president to never reach 3% GDP growth in any year of his presidency and vice presidency, and took on more debt than all 43 other presidents before him combined. And when you compare it to Trump, there's no comparison. And that's where we find this race. And by the way, Joe Biden thinks a lot of himself. I'm getting calls from all over the world. World leaders are calling me. They're almost begging me to do this to save the country, save the world. You mean like dropping another $150 billion on a tarmac for radical mullahs that chant death to America, death to Israel? Okay. Joining us now, Jonathan Gillum, former FBI agent, federal air marshal, Geraldo Rivera, Fox News legal analyst, author of the bestseller, The Geraldo Show. Geraldo, crazy, creepy Uncle Joe. He's got a lot to defend. And by the way, all the deep state stuff that's coming out, that all happened on his and Obama's watch. He's going to have to deal with that in the track record. Nobody seems to think about it all.
Let me get this big stick going first. I think that,
you know, you really can't help yourself.
You're a montage producer.
What was
very wicked.
Well, you know, it's like, are you going to send out another selfie, 70 to new 30 or what? One of the greatest moments on Twitter history.
You know, Joe Biden is a charming man. He's he is beloved in many ways, but he has never been a big vote getter. He's never, any time, as I recall, the last two times he ran for president on his own, he never even got into double digits. So I think that the fundraising aspect of his, the challenges that he faces, are the least of it. I think his problem is that though there are just some people that you like them a lot, but you can't see them in the role that they are seeking. And I think Joe Biden is a classic example of that. He's old school, old-fashioned, old. He's, you know, he's a retread, and I say this, and I honor him for everything he's done, you know, for service for the country and his family, how they have served, and what a great dad he has been. You know, so there's many things that are about him extremely honorable and admirable, but I don't think he has a chance in this field. I really don't. I think that all this
leadership in the polls is very transient. People look at him and he's comfortable, has a lot of name recognition. I'd love to see how much money he raises by this time tomorrow morning, Sean.
Well, there's a story about that already, that he's not raising a whole lot of money. And, you know, you're right. We'll see by the end of the week. And, you know, so far, not really a good start. Many Obama donors have already committed to, you know, crazy Mayor Pete and Kamala Harris and Robert Francis. What are your thoughts? How does he come out in this, Jonathan, especially with a party that is moving towards radical socialism? And it's sort of like, and he has to defend Obamacare. That was radical enough. That failed on a spectacular level.
Yeah, radical failure. But it was, I mean, if he's old school, Geraldo was describing him, he has no chance against these people, just like Nancy Pelosi has no chance against this new breed of socialistic, I would even venture to say communistic people that are coming along and getting and somehow getting elected. But here's the question I have to pose to Geraldo is, what has Joe Biden done that's a success? I mean, in all the years that he's been in government, what has Joe Biden's name been attached to? It's certainly not a winning government. I mean, our government's been in extreme decline in effectiveness since Reagan. So what has Joe Biden or any of these people done?
You can give him credit for Clarence Thomas being on the high court. If it wasn't for Joe Biden cutting up Anita Hill,
wait a minute. He went on a whole apology tour saying he was wrong, just like he's saying he was wrong when he supported segregation.
I think that his strongest suit is, and Jonathan, you asked me very directly. I think the loyalty that he showed to Barack Obama has forever endeared him to the people who love Barack Obama. You know, that kind of loyalty, selfless loyalty, reliability, a good old Joe, your best pal, your wingman has got your back. You know, there's a lot to be said about that as the second banana. You know, in some ways, I feel like Sean Hannity's Joe Biden.
I'm not allowing this. That is ridiculous. And I'll tell you why it's ridiculous, because here you have how many years in broadcasting now? Is it, you're close to 50,
49,
right?
49.
I went back twice in the last year and watched your historic reporting on Willowbrook, which was a mental health facility in New York and Queens, and you single-handedly expose the most awful conditions and horrific treatment of those suffering from mental illness of some kind or another. Not only did you expose it, the whole world's conscience was shocked. You changed it all by yourself. I've never done that in my career, Geraldo. And you think of everything that you've done and everything you've accomplished, every war coverage, war you've covered, war zones you've been in, being shot at. You know, I can't accept that.
Who's the second most powerful person in the United States of America today?
Jonathan Gillum.
Jonathan,
it's not me.
Back.
I can tell you that.
Don't worry. Jonathan will tear the throat out of anyone who threatens you. I have no doubt
about
that.
The only thing we will agree on is the number one most powerful guy in the world, Donald Trump, the president, is on TV tonight, which is great.
That is fabulous. So what are you going to ask him?
I'm just going to go everything. It's the first interview really in depth after the Mueller report comes out. So obviously we got to talk about that. Clearly, you know, we'll ask him about the 2020 candidates and the New Deal and, you know, just get his thoughts. I mean, you know, one of the things that I've learned in terms of being a better interviewer is you ask everything and you actually allow the person to talk if you're not playing gotcha. It took me a long time to learn that because I'm such an egotistical idiot.
It's a tragedy that he can't go on CNN because every other word will be challenged, you know, in a disrespectful way that curtails the free flow of information. You don't get the essence of what the person has to say, the newsmaker has to say, if you're so bent on hostility as they are toward the president. That's why he is going to you, because he wants the American.
Listen, I'm dying to hear what he thinks about the deep state and all these things that are being exposed and whether the FISA warrants will be released. And, you know, this is not Operation Crossfire Hurricane. This is now Operation Boomerang. All those people that tried to take him out rigged Hillary's investigation, then tried to rig a presidential election, and then further tried to undermine a duly elected president. It's all come back on them. It's all coming. We've seen most of it. The story is being put together piece by piece. The evidence is overwhelming. There's going to be a counter shock to this system that is going to be like an avalanche causing an earthquake, and it will draw everybody's attention. But all right, stay right there. We got to take a quick break. Geraldo Rivera and Jonathan Gillum with us. All right, as we continue with Geraldo Rivera and Jonathan Gillum, and both great friends of mine and wonderful people. You know, Geraldo, you picked up something, though, about the Democrats. They don't want this president to succeed. Even when the president, look at what the president offered as it relates to the border. Now, they supported in the second term of Obama funding a wall. They talked about the need for the wall, and now they talk about walls being immoral. But he also put on the table DACA, put on the table Dreamers, put on the table other things to try and entice the Democrats. They wouldn't talk to him.
You know, the country has grown into the Trump position on the border. If you saw Thomas Friedman yesterday in the New York Times, of all places, the most prominent op-ed writer in the Times, saying how a wall was necessary. He was down there. He took the same tour that you and I did with the Border Patrol. He saw for himself the chaos on the border, the fact that it's so very unsafe for the migrants themselves. It's disorderly. It's harmful, not only to their home countries, but to ours, obviously. I think that the president has to stay on message. I think it's very important now that he also has to continue this resistance. He should steal that word from the Democrats.
No, I agree. I'm running out of time. Last word, Jonathan.
No, I think the president should continue to resist, and I'll give the Democrat, all the Democrats that vote Democrat out there, a little bit of advice. If Joe Biden, based on what we've seen in the Democratic Party over the past year, if Joe Biden gets a nomination, you're going to know he was selected, not elected.
You are the best choice for the Democrats in 2020. Why didn't President Obama endorse you?
I asked President Obama not to endorse, and he doesn't want to. Whoever wins this nomination should win it on their own merits.
Sir, why you? Welcome to Delaware.
You and your message very clearly made this about the debate about President Trump, but you're going to have to get through the Democratic primary first. Why are you the best choice for Democrats?
That'll be for the Democrats to decide.
How can you differentiate?
What do you think about the Mueller report, Mr. Vice President?
Vice President, all the stuff in time, okay?
That's something that they should look at, because the Democrat Party does not have the people's interest at heart.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Quick break, right back, and we will continue on the other side. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. All right, it's my Friday. I just happen to be off tomorrow. Do I take any days off? Wasn't I here last Friday?
You don't take
days off
ever.
It was Good Friday, and we came in. Holy Thursday we came in. The day after Easter Sunday we came in, and I had been scheduled to be off Thursday and Friday for the Easter holiday, and I didn't take off, so here I am. So that means, in honor of Friday, it's our Friday concert series. And for those of you that still have Friday to work, just imagine it's Friday tomorrow this time, and this is playing our Charlie Daniels, Big and Rich, Zac Brown Band concert series. Let's hit it.
And a little bit of chicken fried. Cold beer on Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio, I like to see the sunrise. See the love in my woman's eyes. Feel the touch of my precious child. And know a mother's love. It's funny how it's the little things in life that mean. So come on and beat it. It blows me away. Everything I want to say to a woman, but I couldn't find the words to say. She got one of them idiots. I don't know what to do. Cause every time I try to tell her how I feel, it comes out, I love you. You got whatever it is. Keep me in mind. Keep me in mind. way I would lay wasting day after day with you. Sweet Anne, can I stay with you a while? 'Cause this road's been putting miles on my heart. Sweetheart, I've been living in a fantasy. But one day lightning will strike and my bark will lose its vibe, but don't give up on me. Sweet, I got some good friends that live down the street. Got a good-looking woman with her arms around me. Here in a small town where it feels like home, I got everything I need and nothing. Got my toes in the water, ass in the sand. Not a worry in the world, a cold beer in my hand. Life is good today. Life is good today. Adios and vaya con Dios. Yeah, I'm leaving GA. And if it weren't for tequila and pretty senoritas, I'd have no reason to stay.
And we're coming to your city. Gonna play our guitars and sing you a country song. We'll all be flying higher than a jet airliner. And if you want a little bang in your yin-yang, come along.
When the devil finished, Johnny said, well, you're pretty good, old son. But sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done.
Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, there's a dog bite, no child knows.
All right, Justice, I just love music. Doesn't music make you feel good? Makes me feel so good. And by the way, in a second, we're going to talk to our buddy Charlie Daniels. He's got a veterans nonprofit. It's called the Journey Home Project. They've partnered with Rich Poverty Organization to assemble a new art exhibit at the Pentagon. And the exhibit is entitled The Alliance Collection, a gallery literally of combat civilian photographs taken by vets and their families. It's now on display for public viewing. And the Journey Home Project, this nonprofit, you know, assists other not-for-profits in securing the funds they need to help the causes that benefit vets. And let's play it.
So we've been at this for a long time, and we got involved in recognizing veterans' needs. That when our veterans are coming home, and especially it seems like from the more recent wars, the Afghanistan war, the Iraq war, that our Veterans Administration and the government agencies that are tasked with trying to help our veterans transition from one life to another, from military life to back to civilian life, are just dropping the ball. And my manager, David Corley, and myself got together with a couple of people, with Joe and Mercy Longiver and Ed Hardy, and said, let's incorporate this thing. David did a film called The Journey Home, and that's where the name came from. It just seemed like a good name. It's a journey home, I think, describes what happens with our veterans when they come home.
I look at the concept of the Journey Home Project. It is a journey. It is a path, a walk, a journey every bloody day. And it's a hard journey to suddenly not have the focus, the organization, the discipline, the respect, the task, the commonality, the trust that you did when you were in uniform, and then try to adapt to that, the transition period into a society that, for most cases, bluntly, does not hold itself to the same ethical or moral standards that the armed forces do. And so I'm so appreciative of not only the approach of the Journey Home Project, but the recognition that our emphasis from my foxhole needs to be on that transition period, because that transition is different for everyone. That walk along the path back home.
I think there's two parts to this. I think we as veterans need to recognize that we're among a select few that have done and gone and done what we have done, been a part of something that's been bigger than ourselves. Just because we don't put our uniforms on anymore doesn't mean that we're not still a part of that. We still have an obligation to our brothers and sisters to be there for them, to support them and push them just as we did in the military. So we as veterans have to step up and take it to the fight. We've got to be there to support our brothers and sisters and point them in the right direction. We have to learn from our own mistakes. We have to learn from our own hardships. But we can't do that alone. I never would have gotten to where I've gotten if it wasn't for the network that I've created and the help from the Journey Home. And that's where other Americans come into play.
There's a lot of nonprofits out there that are honorable and that are focused on serving veterans rather than benefiting from being associated with veterans. The Journey Home Project is at the top of that list.
So that's what Journey Home is. We are here for the veterans. We're here to try to help them have a softer landing, a smoother transition, coming from the military life to the civilian life.
Wow, that's very powerful. The man, Charlie Daniels, country music legend, dear friend, and probably one of the most generous people when it comes to our vets, loving this country, patriotism, appreciating the sacrifice of others, and giving back, which he's done his entire career. How are you? Good. I can't believe I don't get to see you more often, and I only get to talk to you occasionally on radio and TV. What's going on, my friend?
Wow, man, it's just good to talk to you. I was sitting here trying to figure out how I was going to say anything after that introduction you gave me, man.
Well, I mean, it's a great cause. That's it. And like so many other great veteran causes, like how many freedom concerts did you do for us over the years? We raised a bunch of money, and that money's even still being distributed to this day.
Well, we had more fun than we should have had. You know?
That's true.
It ain't fair to be doing something good and having that much fun at the same time, you know?
Well, it's legendary. Me butchering the devil went down to Georgia on stage, and
you know, you didn't butcher it.
No, I ruined the whole concert. It's your encore, and then you know they're expecting Charlie Daniels' version, and they get the Hannity version, and I'm a mess. I tried my hardest though.
You know something? If you were to go around the country and talk to 100 people that had come to that concert, and you ask them, what is the moment you remember the most?
Oh, no, what is it?
80% of them would say, when Sean Hannity, Devil went down to Georgia and jumped all over the stage, man. A combination of Mick Jagger and Garth Brooks.
Oh, man, there's a combination. By the way, I stay in touch with Charlie Jr., I know you had little health issues a while back, a pretty long while now. You're doing great, right? Back on the road?
Everything's fine. Just had checkups this past week with my doctors, and everything's good. Like, y'all had put up with me for a while longer.
No, I think we'll be, God willing, we'll put up with you for much longer. And how many shows you doing this year?
We've got, I think, 114 on the books right now. We're probably going to get a few more. We're gonna rock on out this year. We're touring. In fact, we're touring with Travis Tripp part of the year, touring with Alabama part of the year, and doing a lot of stuff on our own. So
I love Alabama and Travis. They're both. You know what? I love that style of country. I really do. It's great.
Yeah.
Alabama. You know, sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth. Boom.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Too, you know, great guys for sure. But yeah, we're out here hitting it, getting on it. We're gonna be at Beacon Theater a little later on in the year. Maybe you can come see us there in New York.
Oh, you're gonna be up in? When are you coming up to New York? I didn't know.
I can't remember. I'll make sure you, that you know.
Where am I? What state am I in? All right. So when you're traveling, you travel in this beautiful big Charlie Daniel bus. You tell me you love it. It's home for you in many ways, although I know you love your home back in Tennessee. But yeah. And you travel in this thing. Come on. Over the years, there's got to be days when you're pounding it out night after night after night, entertaining so many people that you're like, what city are we in today?
Well, I do that, you know. I have to stop and think sometimes when I'm getting ready to say good evening, you know, whoever. But
You ever have to say, where are we again? What city are we in this time?
Well, I have made a mistake on that before. People do not like it.
No, they don't like it, man. They want to be loved in their state. You know, and you're still doing music. When did you first know you loved music?
I love music all my life. I can't remember a time when I didn't, but I never got a chance to learn how to play until I was about 14 years old, and a friend of mine showed me a few chords on a guitar. And once I learned three chords on a guitar and I could play a whole song, I was ruined. That's all I ever wanted to do. I just thank God I can make a living doing something I love as much as I do playing music. I'm as in love with it now as I was when I first started out.
Okay, now for people that want to be a part of your charity, it is the Journey Home Project. How do they do that?
We can go to our website.
We got a link on Hannity.com. I'll make it easy for people.
Yeah,
how's that?
Yeah, we kind of website, and you check us out and see what we are. We're very open and above board about what we do. We're involved in a thing right now with a picture display at the Pentagon at Special Forces guy, Tim Wallace, put together. That's an interesting thing. It's like they have done pictures, all vet pictures. They've taken pictures of war, but they've also taken pictures of their surroundings and the places they were fighting from all over the world, the people and the places that they were in and around. And it's a really interesting thing. It gives a whole other look at things. Right. And the thing about it is these guys get together and
it's unbelievable. I love you. I love what you're doing. I love your love of our veterans. They need all the help they can get. It's the Journey Home Project. We just threw it up on Hannity.com. And anything people can do, we always want to support you, Charlie. Thank you for all you do. We love you.
You're a good man, Sean Hannity, and we love you, too. God bless you,
buddy. God bless you. Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern. Yes, President Trump is going to join us. A big story with John Solomon and much more. 9 Eastern, Hannity, Fox. Thanks for being with us. I'm off tomorrow. Have a great weekend. We'll see you tonight back here Monday.